is an interview with Mr. Ronnie Roseborough, March 22nd, 1999, in, are we in Denver?
Denver, North Carolina, yes.
Okay, and Mr. Roseborough, if you could just say a few words so we can test the tape.
Well, how you doing, Mark? I'm Ronnie Roseborough, and I live here in East Lincoln County. Graduated from East Lincoln High School back in 1974, and had some very pleasant memories of the school, and look forward to having this interview with you.
Great. All right. Mr. Roseborough, could you tell me a little bit about your parents? What did they do?
Okay, both of my parents were born and raised in this area. My dad's old home place is probably less than a mile from here. And my mother's home place is probably less than maybe a mile and a half from here. So we're just at home in this area. And my mother worked in her early years, formal years, she worked at Hudson Poultry, which was a chicken processing plant. And after it closed down in the late 70s or early 70s, she left there and worked at Broyhill, which is a furniture company in Lenoir, North Carolina. My father worked at a textile plant called American Eford for many years. And then after his retirement, he kind of dibbles and dabbles in dealing with junk, that kind of stuff. Got a little truck that he does piddles with and does that kind of thing. So I always say that he works harder now than he did when he was supposed to have been working. So, but that's basically their background as far as their working background is.
So you grew up here then?
Basically, yeah. This has been...
In Denver?
Right here in Denver. Like I said, my dad, probably less than a mile from here, the whole home place was down the road. The house, the area that his house sits on was my dad's cotton field. And so we just converted the cotton field into a section of houses.
So did he own all this?
Yeah. And so my brother lives on that side of him, and I got a brother lives on the other side of him, and then my brother-in-law that lives there, and then all the way to the other end is another brother.
So did you have three brothers then?
But a big family. It was 12 of us at one time.
Wow.
I don't know how she evenly split it out, but my mom did. She had six boys and six girls.
And are all of them still around here? You mentioned a few.
All of them, basically, except for my older sister. She lives in Southfield, Michigan. And then my one of my sisters lives up in Raleigh,
okay.
Or Wake County, is where she lives.
Could you describe your schooling growing up? You mentioned that you attended East Lincoln High School. How about
okay.
Before that?
Okay, before that, we went to, before the segregation took place, went to a little school called Rock Hill Elementary School, which is now a Catholic church. And at that school was where we basically got our formal education. Went there from grades 1 through 6, and then, no, 1 through 7, excuse me. And then we went to the 8th grade. That's when we started integrating and went to Rock Springs.
Okay. Did you go to Rock Springs or East Lincoln? Or
Rock Springs.
Rock Springs?
Mm-hmm. Back in the early 70s when East Lincoln was first built, the blacks in this area were given a opportunity to go to either one of the schools at that time before they closed what was the old Nubo down, the all black school, and then they integrated the primary schools that we have here. And so the first class that was at East Lincoln probably didn't have but maybe one or two blacks in the whole school. And so as it went on, the years went on, then it kind of, you know, integrated a little bit more.
I guess could you describe the racial makeup of obviously Rock Hill was a black school?
Basically all black at that time.
So before segregation?
It was an all black school.
It was an all black school.
Yeah. I mean teachers and all.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how about Rock Springs?
Well, when we went to Rock Springs, we were probably, you know, a real strong minority. Most of the classes probably had two or three blacks in each class. And that's basically how the makeup was.
And where is Rock Springs? It's in Denver?
It's in Denver.
Okay.
Last 2 years, that's where my daughter goes to school now.
Wow.
The last two, was it 3 or 4 years? 3 years ago, I think.
Three.
Yes, it's been completely renovated. They tore down the old school, left the gym and the cafeteria, and then just basically built around it. And so it's basically a brand new school now.
And comparing Rock Hill Elementary to the White Elementary School, do you, can you comment on what were the differences? Was there obvious discrimination in terms of funding and facilities and books and things like that?
Well, basically, yes. I think a lot of the books and stuff that we had were more like hand-me-down type materials. But I found out that the educational process, there wasn't a lot of difference. Back when we were coming to school, some of our, well, I had some cousins that taught school, and they really, really made sure that you did what you needed to do
at Rock Hill.
And, you know, they stayed on you. They did a good job as far as making sure that you got what you needed as far as education-wise. Make sure you had your homework done. You know, there was always contact between your teachers and your parents because it was like family. And so, you know, if you were doing something you weren't supposed to be doing classroom-wise, I mean, they knew about it. They knew about it. And then the teachers back then, I think they had more of a hands-on type of thing as far as making sure that, you know, you got your work done. Where, you know, it was more laid back, I would say, when we got to the other school because, you know, if you got it, you didn't. But as far as the working with the parents, we've got more of that out of the black school than we did when we went into the integration process.
Now, were the teachers, you mentioned they were in close contact with the parents. Were they, like, around as far as in the community? You saw them outside of school and in church?
Now, some of them were that way. We had some that were in the area, and then we had some that lived out of the county. Mm-hmm. So there was a mixture there, where some of them were in the county, some of them were out of the county. But you had a situation where most of those teachers taught all your brothers and sisters. So they knew the family. You know, they knew all the families and the structures and everything well. And so there was, they knew what the expectations were as far as the moms and dads and all these kind of things.
And now where are you age-wise?
Right now?
In relation to the rest of your brothers and sisters.
Okay, I'm pretty close to being in the middle.
Okay.
Somewhere in. Stuck in there, it's probably seen them. Okay, I'm number 5 from the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, because so it's four below me, so I'm the 5th going up.
Okay. Yeah, how old is your oldest?
Good question.
Or how much older than
he's probably, my oldest brother's probably maybe mid-50s.
So did he attend Newbold, or did he?
That's where he went to school now. I don't know whether he graduated from there. I don't know.
Okay.
Right off the top of my head. But basically,
so
most of our family.
Before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But up until the point that East Lincoln opened, my oldest sister and the other sisters all went to Newbold. And then my oldest brother. And then I have a couple that went to East Lincoln, and from Pat, no, I think from Linda down to the rest of us all graduated from East Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe a relationship with whites in the area growing up? Did you have a lot of contact with the white community or the black community and white community pretty much separate in terms of social interaction?
Basically, yes, I would say so. We had some situations, Ryan. We had a young man that used to live up the road there. His name was Hugh Sherrill, who was very prejudiced. And as a matter of fact, he kept a real mean dog all the time that was so mean that, you know, we used to work with the school system when I was about 12 years old. And had to ride bicycles back and forth to work to Rock Springs. And we would have to get off the bicycle just to ride by his house so the dogs wouldn't bother us. I mean, that's just how it was. But the first year of integration at Rock Springs went a lot better than I thought it would. We developed some good friendships there. And we're treated real nicely. I mean, we didn't have a lot of problems with the prejudices that some people maybe experienced. And even today, I think some of those relationships that we developed back then are still in place.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say you were treated much nicer or it turned out better than maybe you mm-hmm. had feared it would, are you speaking of the teachers or the administrators or the community or all these things?
Well, I think it would be a combination of things because, you know, the teachers, I didn't have any problem with any of the teachers or the principal or, you know, any of the people in the community as far as that's concerned. But, you know, if you're familiar with Lincoln County, the eastern part of the county is probably a little bit more liberal than the rest of it. And I think they probably have more problems relationship-wise in the western part of the county than they do in the eastern part.
Now, which year, was this 1967, 68, that I believe that's the year that East Lincoln?
Yeah, I think it was 67.
Okay.
67, 68, I think, was the year that the school formed.
So then that was also the same year that Rock Springs was integrated?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't, let me think about this because I graduated from East Lincoln in 74, and I went to Rock Springs for 1 year. So it had to be probably 69.
So you attended 8th grade at
Rock Springs? Okay. Mm-hmm.
And how about informal, or I guess, did you have school athletics at Rock Hill or, before?
We had just very little. We formed a football team. I remember when I was in the seventh grade, we formed a football team, and we played some softball. But the football team, I think we played just a couple of ball games just for organization-wise. And that was against Nubo when they had their elementary school because they went from like 1 through 12. And so they're 6th and 7th graders, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, I guess. We played against them a couple of ball games, you know, didn't have uniforms or that type thing, but it was fun. I enjoyed that. And then we had the same thing with the baseball, softball type situations where we went to different schools. I think it was Newball was one of the schools, and there was a black school in Northbrook that I can't think of the name of at this time, that we would go in and have ball games with them. But as far as athletic competition, those were only some things that we did.
So it was just participation between black schools?
Mm-hmm.
How about informal competition? Was there any sort of games organized yourself between communities, with the white community?
Basically, no. At that time, no.
Okay.
But, you know, we used to, like, after I got to Rock Springs and started playing basketball up there, we used to go, there's a little place up there in Denver called Denver Tire. And they had a basketball goal at the very back of it that we used to go and play. And the guy that owned the place. I mean, we used to go in and play all the time, and we go in there in the afternoons, and that's when we really started the intermingling as far as interracial play and that type of thing. Because
so
we were going in.
Was the owner a black man?
Mm-hmm.
Or a white man?
No, white guy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids from the white kids would come there too?
Yeah.
To
yeah. Was going to play.
And do you remember, was it just kids playing ball, or was there any sort of.
No, it was just kids playing ball. I mean, we'd have a good time. And like the boss was a little bit older than we were, and you know we just go there and have a good time playing ball, just playing ball.
But you mentioned Boyce, did you?
Boss Lynch was his name.
Mm-hmm. And who was he again?
His father at that time owned Denver Tire, and then after his father died, Boyce took over the business and made it own Denver Tire.
And now did he go to Rock Springs as well?
I think yeah. I know he did. At that time.
So you were there with him?
Well, Boyce probably, he's a little older than I am, so He may have graduated at that time from Rock Springs. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, owning the store and then knowing some of us, they had a nice basketball court in the back of the store. The paved court and, you know, nice backboard and everything. So we used to go up there and play. And we had a great time. That's all right.
Just I'm a little bit confused. You attended Rock Hill from grades 1 through 7,
mm-hmm.
and then Rock Springs from grade 8.
8th grade.
And then East
Lincoln from 9 through 12.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So you were at East Lincoln from, I guess, 70 to 74.
74.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe East Lincoln High School in terms of class size? Racial makeup and other things like racial makeup of the SGA, racial makeup of our student
government, racial makeup of faculty, okay.
Administration.
Okay. East Lincoln's probably class size were probably about the same as what we had at Rock Springs, as far as the black makeup there, maybe 2, 3, 4 students to a class.
And how big were the classes?
Usually around 20 to 22, somewhere in that range. As far as the Student Government Association, we had some black officers, you know, in our class thing. That's why I brought this annual out, because I can go back and kind of look at some of the things that we did back during that particular time. But just about, you know, every class, you know, had their officers, and just about most of the time there was at least one black officer in those classes. We had I guess you could call it was a force thing, but our Student Government Association had what we call class coordinators, and part of the responsibilities was to make sure that there was a black and white on some of the committees, to make sure that there was a voice to represent every aspect of the school. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of helped out too, and some of the things that we were doing.
Now, you mentioned that was a force thing. Was there meaning that the school just put down this rule, or?
Well, I don't think it was something that they put down. I think it was just something to make sure that they got the equal amount of participation.
And do you remember there being any problems with instituting that?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't any problems at all with that, because, you know, it's strange, and I don't know why it's like this, but, you know, I tell my child all the time, and I still tell her this today, that it seems to me that we have more racial problems with our children now than we did when we were going to school back in the 70s. And that's very strange, and, you know, that has to be fed. Somebody's feeding it, somebody's spooning it. This is what I was talking about. This is common human relations.
Mr. Terry's just showing me the annual here.
Uh-huh.
So now this human relations group is this the student government, or is it?
No, it's just that was part of a committee that was set up to work on race relations at the school. The student government, basically, you know, we didn't have any blacks in office at that, because that was something where, you know, people voted for, and you had to have this amount of votes and that kind of thing for that, you know. And I don't think too many people ran. You know, I had some people that asked me to run for class president one time, and I didn't. That just wasn't my cup of tea.
Just because you didn't want to do that?
Yeah, it just wasn't my cup of tea, and so I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to that.
Yeah, were there a lot of interracial friendships or maybe even romantic relationships at the school?
Some. Yeah, that was some. But understand, that was in the 70s, so it wasn't something that was open like it is today. You know, it may have been something going on, but it wasn't an open type thing. Like you see open relationships today, the interracial relationships that's going on. But back during that particular time, it wasn't something that you know, that was that was, I would say that would be programmed all over the school, or everybody would know about it. It'd be some people that would know about it. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of, maybe some hush-hush type things. Where today it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah, there was some.
Talking about those friendships or relationships, was, you said that they were kept quiet maybe, or not, knowledge wasn't always widely spread. Was there any, when people did find out about it, was there ever any backlash or bad reaction, or you shouldn't be doing that, or anything like that?
Well, I wouldn't think so, because I know we've got a couple of couples that were dating back to that particular time that got married, and some of them are still together, mm-hmm. you know, after they got out of high school. Mm-hmm. And a few of those couples are still together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, once it became open, and, you know, it wasn't a whole lot of backlash mm-hmm. involved with it.
And was there any conflict in the school in terms of just, you know, there's conflict in every school in terms of certain people don't like each other, certain groups mm-hmm. don't like mm-hmm. each other, but as far as along racial lines, did you get a sense of any of that?
Always. You know, you're always going to have some, but as I said, it wasn't that bad. You're always going to have a few people that, regardless of how hard you try, what you try to do in life, that's going to be, you know, against what you try, or against who you are, mainly because of the color of your skin. But, you know, it wasn't something that I don't think, like I said, was blatant. Mm-hmm. And as far as, and you know, like I told my daughter, I tell my daughter that the situations to me now are worse than they were then. As far as the racial situations that they have in school.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. You know, it's really sad, because you would think that with all the integration and with all the intermingling that we do now and the things that we do together and everything, that it wouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. But it seems like those kids at East Lincoln High School now have more problems than what we had when we were growing up. And I don't know why it's like that. I can't answer that question. I really can't. But, you know, if I were giving an opinion, it's just that something that's force fed. And, you know, I think television has a lot to do with it. And then, you know, whoever you hanging around, peer pressure, and, you know, parental involvement, that kind of thing. It's a lot of different factors going to play there. But that's, you know, that's my opinion.
I don't mean to beat this issue to the ground, but you mentioned that in some cases there were some conflicts. And do you remember any specific incidents where that came to fruition and there was violence or a really uneasy feeling or a lot of tension in the school?
None, not like that. That you know, you might have a couple of incidents where it might be, you know, two individuals that just didn't care about each other, and they might get into a little skirmish, but, you know, of a major proportion of something that was outlandish, no. Mm-hmm. We didn't have those kind of things. No. Mm-hmm. Not at all.
How much contact did you have with white students outside school once you were at East Lincoln?
Oh gosh, when I was a senior, I had a lot of white friends. You know, we went out bowling and to the movies. And, you know, we just hung out together. So, you know, it wasn't. Matter of fact, when I was in high school, I probably hung out more with white students than I did black students. As far as just hanging out with, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Had several friends, male and female.
And in the community. I'm not trying to suggest anything with these questions. I hope I'm not coming off that way. I'm just trying to get a sense of everything. In the community, where, like when you went bowling or when you went to the movies or whatever, did you ever run into any problems either hanging out with white friends or black friends? Or, I mean, what do you think that the community was open to racial mixing?
Well, you know, at that particular time, if I had been, it had been a situation where if it had just been me and maybe some female by ourselves, it might have been a different situation, but it was always a group of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I may have been the only black in the group, mm-hmm. but, you know, so that would make a difference. But if it was never one of those things where I just went out with a female by herself, or, mm-hmm. you know, we were out together somewhere. Mm-hmm. We always went out in groups. So, you know, I think that probably, I never experienced it because I've never, you know, put myself in a position to mm-hmm. experience something like that. Because, you know, the climate was there, sure it was, but, you know, I didn't put myself in a position to get involved in the climate.
And can you expand on that a little more? When you say the climate was there, do you mean just in terms of an interracial
relationship? Yeah. Because, you know, if back then, you know, that was just like I said. It was something you had some people that were involved in interracial relationships, but it wasn't something that was open. Mm-hmm. And if you were seen out somewhere, you know, bowling or movies or whatever with just a female companion, mm-hmm. then you know, it was perceived as that. And you know, the climate and the atmosphere was that if that was to happen, some people would get upset about it. So. You know, if you didn't want to be involved in that scene, you just didn't get involved in it.
Kind of switching gears, what sports did you play?
Basketball.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And can you describe your relationship with your teammates? Was there any racial tension there?
Never. We didn't have any problems at all. Matter of fact, I played football, a little football at Rock Springs, not much, because I basically sat on the bench, didn't get to play that much. And I never did play any football down at East Lincoln, but didn't have any problems as far as to make up or any racial problems with any of the basketball players or, you know, anybody in the school as far as that was concerned.
How about outside of the school? Was there community and fans? Supporters, boosters, whatever, generally supportive of black athletes as well as white athletes?
I think so. Like I said, that was the last, we never had any problems, racial problems with athletics at the school when I was there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was the one area that, you know, everything always seemed to go okay in. Mm-hmm.
And you say that it always seemed to go okay in. Can you expand a little bit on that? What do you mean by, do you think it had anything to do with athletics in terms of getting over any problems that athletics may have helped to ease any problems that existed in the school? Or I don't mean to put words in your mouth.
No, I don't think so. What I meant by that is that, you know, we had some coaches that were really fair. And, you know, they didn't look at the color of skin as far as, you know, whether you made the ball club or not, if you could play, you could play. Whether you was green, purple, or yellow, it didn't make any difference. And we were even in the decision making. Coach Sherry, even when I was a senior, as far as making up the ball club, trying to decide who would fill the last few spots on the ball club, even asked for input, black players over white players and this type of thing. You know, what would be the best makeup for the ball club?
Looking at
who would, who, you know, be in positions where they would not play that much, who would be someone who would come in and learn, or someone would come and practice hard every day and not complain about not getting playing time, that type thing. Mm-hmm. Knowing the makeup of the people, you know, who were in the positions to fill these positions. Mm-hmm. And so to have some input on that aspect of it.
And did he call in team captains or the seniors, or how did that work as far as who did he choose to?
Okay, usually probably, you know, I started my junior and senior year there, so I was a team captain my senior year, and myself and a couple other guys were involved in this process of having, and you know, that's something that you didn't have to do that, but you know, we're making sure that the ball club was. you know, there would be no tensions, no problems as far as making sure that the practices and everything went well. And you wouldn't have people on the bench that would be crying because they weren't getting any playing time or complaining about, you know, I worked as hard as somebody else, why come I can't get to play, that type of thing. But he gave us some instances where we had some input in those areas.
Now, were you the only captain your senior year, or did you have more than one?
I think we had two. Myself and Robin Dellinger, who was a white guy. If I can find my basketball team here. But yeah. This is my high school senior basketball club.
There's two
things. There we go. This is us right.
And now where are you?
Where am I? Right there.
Okay.
Skinny little fella right there. Yeah, don't look like that now.
Oh, what position did you play?
Play guard.
Play guard. Mm-hmm. Now it looks like it's a little less than 50% there. Maybe about a third black and two-thirds white.
We had 15 guys. Well, that's 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 12. And we had 5 blacks on the ball club.
And was that pretty representative of all 4 years of the team while you were at East?
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned earlier that the coaches were very fair about it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that was true for all sports? We've kind of studied it in class a little bit that sometimes quota systems were instituted, especially with regard to like cheerleading and stuff like that. Do you know if that?
I can't really say because we did, you know, we had some blacks on the cheerleader squad, both the JV and the varsity. I don't know what their criteria was for us choosing, you know, who made the cheerleader squad. But, you know, there were blacks on both the varsity and the JV. And, you know, so that was representation in all those areas there.
Now, most of the teachers, I believe I'm correct about this, at East Lincoln came from Rock Springs and New
Ulm. Well, I would say most of them probably came from Rock Springs and other areas.
Okay.
You know.
How many black teachers were there?
At that particular time, just one.
Really?
Yes.
And
then I think later on they got another one. So it was actually maybe two while we were down there.
And was there any tension between black students and the white, hugely majority faculty?
No, well, you know, I've come to find out over the years, and I think this was true back then, is that some of the teachers, regardless of who you are, you know, they're going to be that way. We had some teachers that, you know, we never had any problems out of. And then we had some teachers that, regardless of who you was, they, you know, that's just the way they were. But basically, well, not necessarily. I mean, just based on you as a person. I don't think it was a racial thing. I think some of them didn't have a great like for black folk, but, you know, they didn't really show it that well.
I guess this is somewhat similar to the question I asked before, but do you feel that the community, and specifically the white community, was supportive of the black athletes at East Lincoln? And when I ask that, I'm thinking of kind of the crowd support and crowd makeup. I guess, can you just comment on that?
Yeah. Well, we had a really good basketball team, especially in my senior year. I think we finished like 24-2.
Was that the year that you went to the state final?
Well, we went to the state playoffs. We had our varsity girls basketball team actually won back-to-back state championships.
Was a woman named Lisa Lowry on that team?
Lisa was on a, she wasn't even at East Lincoln at that time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, her brother played on the same team with me,
oh,
Franklin.
Okay.
And then she had two other brothers that played there.
And was she older? The reason
she's younger. She's a lot younger.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Is because actually I hope to speak with her later. That's kind of why I threw out that name. Mm-hmm. I guess getting back to my original question, like about the crowd, did you notice anything there? Or?
No, we played mostly to a full house. About most of the games, because like I said, we had a really good ball club. The girls team was really good. You know, we both went to, well, that one year we both went to state playoffs, our senior year. And I don't know if they won it or they came in second. I know my junior year they won it. They won the whole thing.
Wow.
And then another time in there they won the state championship. We had some really, really powerful basketball teams back in the early 70s at East Lincoln. That was a tremendous basketball program there. Mm-hmm. And it's fallen on hard times lately, but it was really good back in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you played in front of a full house. Like, what was the, do you have any idea of what the ratio makeup
was? You know, a lot of the students. We had, you know, a lot of the students came to ball games, and a good bit of the parents did too. So, you know, we basically always would sit in a particular section. You know, they would all sit together.
The students would all sit together?
Yeah. Yeah, the black students and the parents would all sit in a certain place in the gym for ball games and things. And I think they still even do that today. So, but.
And when you say, sorry, I'm a little bit confused, all the, them would sit together, do you mean all the students would sit together, all the black students would sit together and the white students would sit together?
Okay, black students were basically had a little place, a little corner, a little section of the gym that they would always, the black students and the parents and friends would always sit in a certain section of the gym. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, like I said, that's just the way they were. Mm-hmm. And, so, yeah. And then, like I said, didn't have anything to do with the prejudice or anything. That's just they got together and they cheered hard.
Mr. Terry was telling me a little bit about. He said when y'all were winning, and you were winning a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
He's right.
Right. I guess, how about any experiences at away games? And what I'm especially interested in is when you maybe went to a school that where integration had been less complete or less mm-hmm. successful. There was still some lingering, or was there?
You know, I've never been to a school where we've had any major problems with you know, the racial situations. Probably one of our biggest enemies was West Lincoln. But West Lincoln, very seldom back during that particular time, had any black players. Very seldom. And even today, they may have maybe one or two in the ball club, but not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. And do you know what the... Is that representative of the fact that they're... Just aren't very many black students, or
it's just a rural area, mm-hmm. and you know, a lot of blacks don't live in the West Lincoln part of the county. Most of them live in Lincolnton, mm-hmm. you know, and we have a few here in the East Lincoln area, but most of them are in the Lincolnton, in the township of Lincoln. Mm-hmm.
So you don't remember any
problems? No, not anything that I can just say. Yes, this took place. No, not that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not that kind of thing.
How about press coverage in the newspaper? Did black athletes and white athletes receive their due fair share based totally on their performance and achievements and things?
I think so. I don't think that was a problem as far as the press and stuff was concerned. I always used to say that I came up in the wrong time. If I felt like if I had to come up in, you know, today's athletic situation, mm-hmm. that I probably could have got a really nice scholarship somewhere. Because, you know, back in the 70s, we didn't get a lot of exposure in this area. Even though we had really good basketball teams, we didn't get a lot of exposure as far as the media and college coaches coming in and things like that. But then back, like I said, after 74 and 75, when really start having these the really good basketball teams and them playing a couple of years after I graduated, they played Ashbrook when James Worthy was there.
Wow.
And you know, he would come in, and then we had a 6'10", 6'9", 6'10", white guy named Pat Jolly that got a real nice scholarship. And so we start intermingling a little bit with that type of things, and the press start coming in the area and start really looking at kids. Mm-hmm. But up until that time, they didn't.
Okay.
And you know, we had some people that I knew that if we had had the press coverage that we have today, could have easily gotten basketball scholarships to some nice schools.
Now, did you play basketball in college?
I played 2 years at Chewan, which was a junior college in Murfreesboro, North Carolina.
Okay.
And then I transferred from there and went to UNC Charlotte. And the year that they, well, the my senior year there is when they went to the Final Four. That year.
What was the name of that? I'm trying to remember his star player.
Cornbread Maxwell.
That's right, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Cornbread Maxwell.
Yeah. And what, how about the race of referees when you were playing?
Most of them white.
Basically. But it wasn't exclusively white?
Most. Well, I would say so, because I very seldom remember seeing any black officials at that time. To be honest with you.
And did you get the sense that discrimination ever figured into games?
No, mm-mm. Never did. I don't think it ever presented itself, mm-hmm. that I can remember. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I never paid a lot of attention to officials anyway. I just went out and played.
Mm-hmm.
And you never had a problem as far as, you know, getting little tic-tac fouls and stuff called, that type of thing. Then, mm-hmm. That would influence the ball game, though. No.
Mm-hmm. No. And how about trash talking between players? First of all, did it happen? I mean, now you hear it in college. I mean, I know from my experience in high school, it happens quite a bit. Was it prevalent back then?
I don't think it's nearly as prevalent as it is today. You know, we did a little bit, but not much. Steve Cherry was a no-nonsense type coach. And so we didn't put up with a lot of that stuff. You go out and play, you play hard, keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we talk to each other, but as far as talking trash to other players, no.
Mm-hmm. And did you have opposing teams talking to you, and more specifically, talking to black players on your team?
No, not. Like I said, I didn't experience a lot of racism, even in, you know, playing basketball. We didn't see a whole lot of it. And you know, to me, things like that, if it's done in a proper way or improper way, can give you some motivation. And when you're playing hard and somebody's already got an edge over you, you know, you don't want to give them any extra motivation. So we didn't have a lot of problems. Like I said, we didn't have a lot of close ball games my senior year. I mean, we used to, you know, beat up people pretty bad. Matter of fact, one of our strongest competitors was Bobby Lutz at Banyas High School. So Bobby
was
and I
he
played.
A player then?
Bobby played at Banyas High School. We played against each other in high school.
Really?
And you know, now he's coaching UNCC.
Yeah.
And that was one of our biggest rivals at that particular time. But as far as having any problem, no.
When did you decide to go into the ministry?
Well, this is actually my first year in ministry. It's something that's been probably on my life for a long time. I was in what we call lay speaker in the United Methodist Church, certified lay speaker for like 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something that had been on my mind for a long time. And you know, I've always heard people say, when God's working on you, when God calls you, there's not much you can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well just listen. And so began to ask questions, to just sit down and talk to the Lord, and then begin to ask my questions, can you see yourself doing anything else?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that was no.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told God, I said, okay, you know, this is what you want me to do. And it seemed like after that, doors just start opening all over the place. And so that's where I am now.
Mm-hmm. I guess, is there anything else you'd like to say? Comments on the annual or your experiences, just general stuff, specific stories.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. We used to have some fun. We used to do a lot of crazy stuff. I worked in the library my senior year, and I used to do a lot of things in there. But we had a really good, I thought we had a really good class. Matter of fact, we are in the process now working on our 25th class with you. 25th class with you.
And there were between 20 and 22 people in your class?
Yeah, each class. I think our graduating class was like, I can't remember, it was 100 and something. I can't remember how much it was right off the top of my head.
So there were 100 seniors in it?
Yeah, over 100, yes. Yeah, in that class. So twins that was in there, McSwain twins, and had some fellas had some really wild names back that time, and but we had a lot of fun. We really, really did. And some of the things that, like I said, the problems some of the children have today, we didn't have a lot of problems back then. Really did. Steve Cherry was an excellent coach, excellent basketball coach, and we had a guy that coached on the JV ball club back then was a man named Short Howard. And Short was a really good basketball coach, and he gave us a lot of nicknames. We had a guy named Jackie Robinson that was probably about 5'7", but averaged probably about 15, 16 rebounds a game. He could just jump out of the gym. And he called him Jackson, and he called me Slim. and that nickname stuck with me until until I went out to college. But, that's what everybody called me. When I was at East Lake, they called me, all the basketball players called me Slim anyway, because that's what Short charged them. And
how about other students?
Well, most of them just called me Ronnie. But the thing about that, I can remember when, especially on the JV team, my freshman year, I was the last person to make the basketball team. And, worked hard enough doing practice. And by the end of the year, but the next year I came back, I started. Mm-hmm. Being from somebody that came from just barely making the ball club to starting the next year. Mm-hmm. And then I started 3 years at East Lincoln. Made all conference my junior and senior year.
So I had was it 100 students, more than 100?
More than 100. Right, more than 100.
What percentage would you guess? How many black students were there? I guess I was...
You're talking in my senior class?
Yeah.
I would say probably. Let me see if I can count. Probably about 15 or 20, maybe. Maybe. I can't say for sure. Let's see, 1, 2. Probably 22 or 23, somewhere in that class.
And do you think I'm trying to think of my own high school experience of like the athletes were popular and were school leaders and things like that. A lot of it was based on, well, not just based on being athletes, but mm-hmm. they gained notoriety and I guess respect of their classmates based on mm-hmm. being on the basketball team. Did you have a similar experience? Do you think, I guess, did race ever figure in with that? That's a pretty unclear question.
I understand what you're saying, but I think in some cases it did because I was an athlete, but I also was a pretty good student. Mm-hmm. I was in the Beta Club and, did some other things and some of those organizations, and a lot of different organizations in the school, and based on that, I was looked on as one of the leaders in the senior class. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was all based on basketball, mm-hmm. because basketball just takes up one part of the
right.
part of the season. But we had some guys that, and usually you do in high school, that participate in two or three sports. But I just wasn't one of those type.
guess is there anything else that you'd like to say?
No, not unless you have any more questions to ask me.
But
you know, as far as my experiences with desegregation, you know, I haven't had a lot of bad experiences. Probably the worst experience that I probably ever had was when I went to one day I went up to Denver to play basketball, and these two guys, you know, jumped on me, and they didn't, you know, when I fight in person anyway, and they called me some names and all this kind of stuff because basically they didn't know who I was and I didn't know who they were. But after that
were
particular,
you in high school at this time,
I was at Rock Springs.
Okay.
And after that, I never had any more problems. When boys found out, you know, the guys and who they were and everything, I have never had any more problems out of those guys after that.
So that was at the tire shop?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just didn't know you. You didn't know them.
Exactly.
They
took. Yeah, I guess they got a little offensive. But you know, like I said, after boys found out about it, I had no more problems with that.
Well, I really appreciate your time.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. And I guess, is there anyone else that you think would be willing to speak with me, would like to speak with me about their experiences? Maybe your classmates, teammates, perhaps Boyce himself, if he's still around.
I can't say, Mark. When you talk with Lisa, I think you said you're going to interview her.
Yes.
See if you can mention something to her about her brother. Her brother and I are real close.
Okay.
Today, he's in the ministry too.
Okay.
And we played basketball. We were on the same team together.
Okay.
And so he could probably tell you some stories too.
Okay.
Also, you know. And one of our guys that played with us on that basketball team is now assistant coach at Appalachian State.
I think Mr. Cherry.
Yeah, so he's coaching up there. So.
And what is his name?
LaVell Hall.
Right.
Yeah, he's assistant coach there. So.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
I really appreciate your time. I guess would you be willing to speak again if I have any follow-up questions? I don't know if that would be necessary.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you very
right.
much again.
Okay, Mark.
Yes, Mr. Roseberg, if you could tell me a little about the human relations group or club at the school.
Okay, Mark, what that was, it was each class would have a representative from just like a homeroom class. Each homeroom class would have two representatives. They would have a black representative and a white representative. And the primary purpose of human relations was to make sure that there weren't any racial problems or any kind of problems at the school that they couldn't deal with or we couldn't deal with. And so, you know, whenever we would come together, we would meet as a group, then we would sit down, we would hash out situations like, you know, what was the situation was going to be with homecoming and how are you going to deal with that, what kind of music we were going to have, this type thing. If there were any problems with students or if there were any problems with teachers or that type of thing, we would deal with that in our human relations group. And it wasn't one of those things where you would look at it and say, well, this is going to be a one-sided issue because you had representation from the school.
Mm-hmm.
The school was represented. And so, you know, that's basically what it was, but it was a thing where you would, or a class or a group where you would meet and discuss the issues of the school and making sure that it was everything was run like it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that was all about.
And with regard to like homecoming and events like that, sometimes based on what we studied, like schools would either alternate and have a black homecoming team 1 year and a white the next, or have one each every year. Did you all have any sort of thing like that? Or?
Mm-hmm. You know, your student council or your student body voted on who was homecoming queen.
Mm-hmm.
It was a voting type thing. We always had, you know, black representation on the court. There were a few times we did have black queens.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that there was an incident with my younger sister that People said that, you know, she supposedly won Homecoming Queen but was not crowned. But, you know, I'm not familiar with that enough to really say that that's what happened. I don't know. But there was a lot of talk at that particular time, and it's exactly what happened. But I don't know. I can't say because I wasn't there.
Well, thank you. I guess if I could look a little bit more, if you have time, if I'm keeping you from doing anything.
No. The only people that maybe wanted to be involved with mechanics, that one guy that's in there is a good friend of mine, and he loved it.
Which?
That's Edwin McLean, I think is his name, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, and Ed loved working on automobiles and still does today. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was just a bunch of guys that had interest in working on mechanical things. And but Ed.